Welcome to WPM, Writing, Publishing, Marketing. This event happens on the second Tuesday of each month from March through November. This is our third year of doing these podcasts. And at each event, we have three authors, one talking about writing, one talking about marketing, one talking about publishing. Although we're probably going to change the venue a little bit next year. Tonight, we have three authors. We have Mary Lou Bagley, and we have a bookstore owner, Chris Upton, and we have Tara Whitney. And so I'm going to let each of them talk for a few minutes on their topic, and then we'll open up for questions from the audience. I would ask you to save your questions until all three have done their presentations. These podcasts are recorded and made available on Mott Publishing, maatpublishing.net. If you're listening to this podcast on our website, there's a whole page of podcasts, and there are hundreds of hours of audio there for you to listen to, so please take advantage of the other podcasts that are on that page. A little bit about Mott Publishing. Marilyn Carter and I started Mott Publishing about 6 or 7 years ago because we wanted to do a second edition of our book, and we weren't happy with the publisher we had, so we started our own publishing company, and then we started helping other authors to publish their own books. So during that time, we met a lot of authors in the New Hampshire Seacoast area, and we were fortunate to get the auspices here of WSCA Community Radio in Portsmouth, and they allow us to do this presentation on Tuesday nights. So please support WSCA Community Radio. All right, I'm going to turn it over to Mary Lou.
Hello, my name is Mary Lou Bagley. I have been a writer for most of my life. Short stories, very short, flash of microfiction, and poetry were my mainstays for a long time. And then along came this character and this interest in a particular subject, second sight, or some people would call it psychic abilities, intuitive abilities. And along came this character, Margaret, and I decided that this needed a longer form. So it became a matter of deciding to explore the novel process, which is a very different experience from writing short fiction. I have a number of experiences with short story publication and poetry. I had a little business a long time ago in Dover called Away With Words, and one of the things that happened a lot there was personalized poems for people based upon a questionnaire, and then that turned into a lot of pet poems, personalized pet poems. And I was writing feature articles and short stories, again, always. So ultimately, I went and took a course. I have a degree in English education and taught the writing process and theater arts. But I took a course at UNH in the Division of Continuing Education with Martha Baron Barrett and brought a piece and said, I don't even know if this is a story. And that began, first of all, a community because I met some wonderful writers there. And then I discovered, after being there for a while, that Martha and a woman, Sue Wheeler, who both taught at UNH, had this writer's workshop retreat conference called Molasses Pond. And it was in Maine, and I was invited, based upon my writing, to join that. The rules of Molasses Pond are you can only go 3 times in your lifetime. They encourage people to do more conferences and go to other places and explore. And they only have spots for 10 people. So I started doing Molasses Pond. I did that 3 times over several years. Then that turned into Twin Farms, Writing Retreats, which is in Wakefield, New Hampshire, run by Titia Bourgeois. And then I developed a website, and my website is www.marylubagley.com, and I started writing a blog. And the blog is for writers and other creatives. Well, we're all creative. And it's meant as an inspiration. keep going, don't give up, how to find subjects if you're having a problem with that, what it feels like to finally get a novel published, which I have finally done. So I welcome people to sign on to the blog. I promise I do not post very often, so your mailbox will not be full. Every now and again, it'll be a little surprise. Here comes a post from Time to Write is the name of the blog. This particular month is NaNoWrite month, and what I've been doing this month is not writing a novel for the month, which is the point of that. I have been doing what's called Flash NaNo, and I highly recommend it. The person involved, Nancy Stallman, gives you a prompt every day. So every day you write a short piece, and there's no length limit. One of the prompts, in fact, was write a story in 10 sentences, which was a fun experience. I did, however, find myself counting syllables on my fingers as if I were doing a haiku. No, this is sentences, 10 sentences. In another experience, we were given the prompt to write what Natalie Goldberg calls a six-word memoir. Actually, that was another retreat I went to, which is a wonderful experience also. But again, there I sat thinking in terms of 5-7-5 syllables, because I tend to do the formal Japanese style of haiku. And then, no, it's just asking for six words here. So I have some writing rules I just want to throw out. They're not mine. I've adopted them from other people, but I just think they're a lot of fun. Seat of the pants to the seat of the chair, to me, is rule number one for writing. I have had people come back and say, well, my seat is on the futon, or my seat is on the beach, or wherever your seat is, it needs to hit the whatever you're sitting on, and do the work. Practice, write, experience. Don't wait for inspiration. Just keep at it. Get it down. Don't wait for it to be good is another one of my rules, and that is to just plug away and let the words come out onto the page. Later, you can edit. Now, some people find, and we all are different, they need to edit as they go, and I honor that. For me, it's get it down and don't wait for it to be good. So it's just flush of words that come through, and then later on I dig in and edit. Go where the writing takes you. Cultivate surprise. That's an expression I got from Donald Murray, who used to teach journalism at UNH. He has now passed. He also gave me a sign that I have on my writing desk that is in Latin, and I don't pronounce Latin, so I won't try, but it means never a day without a line. And that can be something that you dash off on an envelope, just a sentence, but never a day without a line. It's a great little writing rule. Then I say about a book or a short story, write the book that you would like to read. Give people the experience, offer the experience that you would like to have. Don't wait for inspiration, which I mentioned before. Just show up in the seat, and after a while it becomes a habit, and your body, your mind, everything says, oh, okay, this is writing time. And even if a lot of garbage comes out, you let it come out, and you get through that to what it is you need to say. As a writer, we all, of course, have to observe and listen. I surround myself, not everybody goes for this, with imagery that is conducive to the writing process. On my desk, I have a little picture. I cut it out years ago from a magazine, and it's a circle of storytellers, and they're in hooded capes, and they're leaning into a fire. And one of them is standing, and her arms are gesticulating, and you know that she's telling a story, and everyone is leaning in. And I found this incredibly interesting frame that I put it in, and there it sits on the desk. So even if I'm not looking at it consciously, it's there. I also happen to light three particular candles that I have, because again, it's my signal. It's writing time, okay? So it's not go check your Facebook or do something else or check the mail or anything else. It's writing time. Another thing I want to be sure to pass on, and most writers know this, but it's worth repeating, read your work out loud. It's the best way to edit. It's the best way. Now we're talking in the later stages of writing, not that initial, what Annie Lamott calls the shitty first draft. If you want to check and edit your writing, read it out loud. Otherwise, your brain, if you're reading it silently, your brain will correct. It knows what you meant to say, so it'll skip right over a skipped word or a repeated word or an awkward grammatical construction. But if you read it out loud, your ear will hear that. If you stumble while you're reading, oh, okay, this needs a little fixing. And when my novel came back to me from the publisher for that final check, I literally sat there and read the novel out loud. And my novel doesn't have any mistakes in it. And I'm talking punctuation, grammatical errors. Well, again, you may find some. Probably shouldn't say that. But the best way to do it is to read it out loud. And when you're working on a piece, again, when you're self-editing, reading it out loud is just, you take the time, tell the family if you think they might think it's sounding a little crazy. I'm going to be talking out loud for a while, just, you know, ignore it and read out loud. I also recommend that you do readings once the work is done, every chance you get. I love doing library readings and talking with readers afterwards. Everyone loves to be read to, and I've had people say that at my readings. You know, one woman raised her hand the day of my launch and said, "Oh, I just love being read to," and all the heads around were nodding because we do. You don't have to be a child to enjoy being read to, so I highly recommend that. It's also considering myself learning more about my state. I'm not a native of Maine, but I've lived there for a number of years. And my novel is set. My novel is Otherwise, by the way, two words. It's set in Maine, and I'm getting to know my state one library at a time. I've also had a yarn shop ask me to come and do a reading, and she's sold all kinds of books. She did warn me before my reading to not expect people to be looking at me while I was reading. She said they're going to be knitting, so just, you know, be prepared, and they were. Another fun thing that I did at that reading is I told people if you put your name and email address in a hat, it was a knitted hat, of course, I'll draw one and use that name in my next book, which I'm working on now. Well, this wonderful name happened that I never would have made up. And out of it has come this character. My husband is here and he doesn't know this character yet, so it's something for you to look forward to. Her name is Kasia Gula. And again, because that name was given to me, she's a brief character, and I had told people, you know, it'll be a peripheral character that may not show up for long or again, but out of it came this beautiful character. I also recommend joining community. I am a member of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. They have the most amazing workshops. They have a conference every year called the Maine Crime Wave. You don't have to be a mystery or crime fiction writer in order to go, because once you're there, we all speak the same language. And it's such a joy to go to the workshops and, you know, listen to what people have to offer. And there's always a panel. I've gotten to know one man who has since started writing. He was a consultant because he's a cop. He's a detective from Portland, Bruce Coffin, and you may have heard of Bruce's books. His third one in this series has had a wonderful reception and won lots of awards. So when I was writing Otherwise, I had this character, I wanted to write about people with second sight. I wanted it to be a book that was a real person. I wanted it to be something that I would enjoy reading. I had found so many books and movies on the subject, if you will, that I didn't care for. There was something that was disappointing about the handling of it. So Margaret is my working to write the book I would like to read, and she's my intention is to have her be down to earth, direct, you know, spinach between your teeth, she'll tell you, ordinary woman with this rather extraordinary ability, and I want people to not think of her as this like oddball, although in her community she is seen as the other by many. And then along one day came this dialogue between two older men, and thus became the first scene in the book where these two men are talking about Margaret, and she's a puzzler. And this young woman is sitting there, she's a relative, and she's overhearing the conversation. And in this dialogue, we get our first introduction to Margaret, the main character. Later, a little while later, we meet Margaret. So it started with a piece of dialogue. I am an actress, and so dialogue just sort of comes to me. It's not something I've studied, but I've had enough experience being different characters that it helps. I get a little wordy and long-winded at times in my dialogue, as I myself am. Quickly, I want to also say the best thing you can do as a writer is have a good editor. And if you're waiting around to get a publisher and thus have the editor, in my experience, I'm not getting any younger. I decided that I would hire an editor. And I found the most fabulous editor right here in this area, and we had the most wonderful collaboration. She made such a difference in the writing of the book. In fact, the book was about 156,000 words when I first handed it to her, and it is now 119,000. And it was just suggestions she made. She didn't try to take over or anything. And then she did the final line edit, which is right down to the, you know, the punctuation being correct and the grammatical things, etc. I have recommendations, but my time is probably getting close of people who offer workshops and retreats. There's a woman in Maine, Jody Poloni, up on the Pemaquid Peninsula, who offers Maine Coast Writers Retreats, and they are absolutely delicious. The first one I went to was called Salty Girls. It happened to be all women. We went to a B&B and stayed put, and most of the meals were provided as part of the cost, and it was an incredible experience. Since then, I've been to workshops with her. The Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance offers workshops also. I've taken one with Claire Guyton. It was called Small Wonders, Micro and Flash Fiction, Crafting Micro and Flash Fiction. I first met Claire when we were both of our short stories were selected to be part of a book called Summer Stories, and she was granted a fellowship with the Maine Literary Commission, and as her project she decided to write what she called a daily shorty, and she wrote a complete mini micro flash story every day for a year. And her short fiction is just wonderful. I went to a workshop with Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote Big Magic, and that was wonderful. And on the way home, my husband and I went down to Kropalu, and we experienced this. And we listened to her podcast, which I also recommend, called Magic Lessons. And each one is delightful. Another podcast I've recently discovered is a woman in Maine called Read to Me. And she will take a portion from a favorite book of hers and read it, and her reading is just wonderful. Again, the love of being read to. And it will lead to discussion afterwards. Becky Rule and Sue Wheeler, both New Hampshire, they used to both teach at UNH, have written a book called Creating the Story. Annie Lamott's Bird by Bird, I dig in every now and again because it's funny and it's lifelike. You can apply anything she says about writing to life. In Big Magic by Liz Gilbert, there was a wonderful story of a poet, Ruth Stone. We wonder sometimes, where do ideas and thoughts and things come from? Well, for Ruth Stone, I've never experienced this, but I would love to. She said from the time she was a child, she'd be out in the field and she would hear a poem coming to her, galloping across the field. And she would have to run to the house to grab paper and pen to get it down. And sometimes she would get to the house and not be in time, and the poem will have come through and start to go past her. And she says she would grab that poem by the tail, like grabbing a tiger by the tail, and pull it back. And the poem would come out on the paper from the last word to the first, backwards. Now, again, I've never experienced anything like that. I believe Ruth has, and I just love that story. That's the kind of thing Elizabeth Gilbert will offer you. A great quote by Natalie Goldberg, I would like to share. She's also the one that started the six-word memoir idea. Or she borrowed it and passed it along, at any rate. Don't throw it all away with yada, yada, talk, talk, talk. Hold your stories in your belly. Pour them onto the page. Later you can talk. Don't diffuse your energy. And I was at a workshop one time, and there was one woman, a conference, would try to trap people in the kitchen to talk about the work that she was going to do. And you could see people, their body language, they're trying to get away and be polite and still trying to get away, and she'd be talking. She did not write the book because she had diffused the energy of the story rather than exploring it in the writing on the page. So I think I've probably gone on long enough. We have Chris and Tara to speak, so I will hand it over.
I just want to mention that I usually do the publishing chair here, but Chris Upton owns a bookstore here in the Seacoast area, and this is the first time on this podcast that we've had a bookstore owner, so this is going to be a different kind of presentation. So, Chris Upton.
Hi. Thank you, Steve. Okay, my name is Chris Upton, and I'm the proprietor of a Freethinker's Corner bookstore in Dover, New Hampshire, 652 Central Ave. And our website is freethinkerscorner.com. And I was asked by Steve to speak about publishing. Now, I'm not a writer. I have written some poetry in the past. I did start a few words for the Nano November writers thing, so we'll see where that goes. But for publishing, as far as a bookstore goes, we at our store, and there are quite a few other stores who have consignment programs for local authors. Our consignment program is bring us your book, we'll read it over, and if it fits the philosophy of our store, the editing is good, we'll have you come in, give us a few copies, see how they go, and then we'll put it on the shelves, have you in for book signings. One thing I've found over the past year or so, we've been open for about a year and 3 or 4 months, is not a lot of local writers know about the different avenues of publishing, other than the evil river, Amazon. There are numerous other outlets for publishing. One thing I would like to say is not a lot of bookstores are taking Amazon published books, be it CreateSpace or the new Kindle Direct, whatever they call it now. And the reason for that is, from our point of view, it's self-defeating. A writer publishes their book via Amazon. We buy that book from you. Our money is going to Amazon, who's trying to put us out of business. So a lot of bookstores now are not independent bookstores. They're not taking published CreateSpace or Kindle published books. But there are numerous other outlets. One being Lulu. I think it's a little expensive. It can be, as far as how you would have to price your book. That's one of the things that we look at along with the editing. Cover art is a huge factor too. You do judge a book by its cover. I wish I had brought the book today, but there was one that we just got in from an independent author. And the cover right there, you look at it, you look at the title, and you know what the book is about. We've had some come in that you can't tell what the book is about. You can't tell what the story is just by the cover. So covers is huge. It's very important. So there's lulu.com. But highly recommended is a real publisher. Independent publisher. Mott Publishing. Green Writers Press. Main Publishing. There's a couple here in Portsmouth as well. By going through a publisher, for us as a bookstore, we know it adds credibility to the book, that it's been edited, that the cover's been looked over. Does it fit the book? Does it fit the story? It's been put together, and it's a good story. And we, and those are the things that we look for. There are there's an independent publisher that we work with. It's called it's a hybrid company. There's a lot of vanity presses out there too. Those are the ones that you want to be careful of. Those can cost a lot of money and may not get you what you need. But there is one that we work with, we have a partnership with. It's called Dart Frog Publishing. And it's a hybrid company. They're based in Manchester, Vermont. And so for us, which is good, they're a local company. That's one thing we try to do with our store is go with local publishers, local companies. We have other items other than books, art, artisanal items, consumables. We try to stay as local as possible. And so we found this company, and the way they work is you can either have your own published book, you submit it to them, there's no charge, they read it over, they look it over, they check the editing, the cover, everything. And if it fits their specifications, their criteria, they will distribute. And what they do with us is they will send us a copy of one book, and then if it sells, our agreement is to, we put it on a dedicated shelf. And so we have one shelf, it says Dart Frog Publishing on it. We take a picture, we send it to them to show that we have them. Every 3 months they send us a new set of books, usually 15 titles, anywhere from 10 to 15 titles. And then we put it on our shelves, face out, send them the picture, and then this way, their authors from all across the country, they can see that their books are now in a bookstore. And then, like I said, our agreement is after that book sells, we will go to our wholesalers and get Ingram is the wholesaler that they deal with and that we deal with to get more copies. So that's one way to do it. The other way they work is they are full service. They will do everything from you send them their raw manuscript, and they do everything. Editing, cover art, distribution, marketing. There's different degrees, different levels that you can do. You can have it in just a handful of bookstores, or you can have them in all the bookstores that are partnered with them. Right now they have between 60 and 70 partnered bookstores across the country. So it's not just a regional thing. It is a national publication. It's a way to get your book out there, and they only deal with independent, independently published writers. And then, like I said, we will go and buy more as that one sells. And then 3 months later, they'll send us a new set. We'll take the old ones or the down in the general population of books, or I like to leave them up with and in between some of the other ones. But we highly recommend working with a publisher. We know it's difficult sometimes, as Mary Lou suggested, if you have to, go out and get your own editor. And just do it step by step. But it's we understand that Amazon is an outlet for you. It's a necessity for writers, but it's not the only way to go. And I'll repeat, a lot of bookstores won't take Amazon printed books anymore. So we might be changing our consignment program to go along with that. I'm still learning the process as we go, so a lot of our policies change every so often.
So my name is Tara Whitney. I'm the author of Hungry, Trust Your Body, and Free Your Mind Around Food. I'm a transformational coach, and I support women and guide women to change their relationship with food. This was not... I've been doing this for about 3 years, and prior to that, I was actually a CPA and worked in public and corporate accounting. So I did not, although I thought maybe in the back of my mind it would be nice to write a book, that was certainly never a long time plan, and nor am I a trained writer. So I'm going to talk about marketing today, and I guess the reason why it's important for you to understand my history with writing, or not so much a lot of history with writing, was because the marketing of my book was really developed before I even started writing the book, which was understanding who I was writing the book for, why I was writing the book, and what I wanted this book to do for my business. And those are some important things to consider, because although I loved writing my book, I was writing it for a very specific purpose. I write about women's relationship with food, and I believe I share a very unique message. And I had my own personal struggles with food from a very young age, and really took it upon myself to find answers. And I was frustrated because I couldn't find those answers. Every book I read, every place I went, nothing really worked or fit. And then when I finally started to figure it out myself, I thought, well, no one's sharing this the way I'm sharing it, so it's important that I share it. So I guess I want to sort of put that out there, because for me, the real catalyst for me writing this book was knowing that I had this vision of women who were in a place that I was at one point. And just like Mary Lou mentioned, I was writing it for them. I was writing it for this person who I knew was looking for answers, and I had the answer for them. I also was writing this book because I also wrote this book so because I wanted to, quite honestly, demonstrate my knowledge and my expertise in my industry and let people know exactly what my methodology and my thought process was and how I approach things. So it was like also a way for people to get to know me. So, with all that being said, how I've marketed my book was starting with who I was marketing it to. And so, when I think about marketing, it's about letting people who don't know you get them to know you. So for people who aren't aware that you exist, let them know that you exist. And Tim Grawl is a great book marketing expert, and I followed him and have used a lot of his guidance. He wrote a book called Your First 1,000 Copies. And so I think one of the most important things a writer can do who wants to sell 1,000 plus copies is to have a community of people that they can sell their book to. And the best way for them to have a community of people to sell their book to is to have an email list where they're connecting with their community on a regular basis. And so having an email list is something that can be a little bit of a stretch for an author, I think. because it kind of puts you out of your comfort zone. But it's important to have a group of people who know you exist and then give them share content that might be valuable to them. So in a lot of ways, you're having a community and you're nurturing them and you're supporting them and you're giving them some interesting material. So for me, I have a nonfiction book. So a lot of the material that I can share is very easily relatable around women's relationship with food. And I have a lot of topics that I can talk about around body image and around my perspective on dieting and on body connection and on a whole bunch of different topics that are both in this book and kind of outside of this book. But I try to send an email at least once a week to my list and like kind of not to pester them, but to add value. So, you know, assuming that my list of people have are interested in my topic, then I want to just share with them little nuggets of information that they might find useful. So, so before I published my book, probably about 60 days or so before I knew I was going to publish my book, I started to kind of let my list know, like, hey, guess what? I'm writing this book. And then I kind of got some emails back like, oh, very cool. I can't wait to read it. And I'd be like, okay, well, great. And then I would, you know, maybe I'd post a picture of myself writing, or I'd be at White Heron kind of writing away, or I would sort of be dropping some little nuggets to them, kind of letting them know that like something's coming and it's coming soon. And when it does come, I hope you buy it. Because it's, you know, there's this idea of like a book launch, like this big premiere. And there's certainly opportunities where I think a lot of authors do like a big pre-launch, like a pre-sale. I didn't do a pre-sale with my book, but one of the things I did do was I offered them an incentive. So I said, hey, look, my book is being published on July 12th, and I created like a giveaway. And I said, if you buy this book in the next week, then I'm going to give you this free gift. And it was just some more digital content that supported the contents of this book. So it was really designed for people who wanted to read this book, but also were like, oh, I'm interested in this content. And this I did a little mini course that I gave away, and it was like they were interested in that as well. So when I got ready to publish it, I also made sure that I just kind of gave like a little bit of a push for them to buy the book, so that I could get the book in as many hands as possible. So when you think about marketing, one is growing your community and adding value to them. And like I said, the best way to do that is your email list. Now, I use an email software called ConvertKit, but there's others like MailChimp and others that aren't that expensive. But I think for any writer who does want to sell a bunch of copies, whether you use a publisher or not, I published myself. You just need to have a following, and you need to have an audience of people that are engaged with you. The other thing that I did is I went out to like 50 of my best friends and I said, hey, I'm writing this book, and if I give you a pre-read, will you write a review for me? And like at least half of them were like, sure, sounds great. And probably half of them were like, actually wrote the review, which I get it, because, you know, that's a big commitment to read a book and write a review. But I had some very generous friends that wrote reviews. And I did write them on Amazon, because you know, the reality is as a self-publisher, that's the first place a lot of people are going to buy their books. And Amazon has rankings, which I don't really pay a lot of attention to, but it's certainly, I do know, if I do pay attention to them, reviews do influence how your books are ranked under certain categories. But either way, we know that if we're interested in a book, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to read reviews. And it just puts a little more oomph behind the book, and maybe is a nice incentive for people to want to buy the book if they were ever on the fence. So I think getting people to review your book, and what I what I'll do is I'll just reach out to them and say, hey, thanks. Maybe they'll email me back like, hey, I really enjoyed your book. And I'll just write them back and say, thank you so much. And do you mind putting a review on Goodreads? And do you mind putting a review on Amazon.com? And then generally they'll just go in. And I say, you don't need to write much. Just write something. And just be honest. Like, I know we're friends, but I'd rather you just be honest, because that's more important to me. So those were a couple of other things I did in the marketing world. So there may be, from my understanding, is, you know, we've got these social media platforms. We've got Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn and Pinterest and Twitter. And from my understanding, they often don't sell books. They might help build your platform, but social isn't really the way where you're going to sell a ton of books. However, the way I look at social is that if I keep showing up consistently, then it gives people more access to me and helps me to build eventually my list. So I just kind of, like, as my approach is probably more selling to the fans in my email community is more important, and then getting my fans to share the book with others has more value than necessarily getting any, you know, kind of putting a Facebook post asking people to buy my book. That's just not really has been my approach. So I think, so community, number one, connect, number two, adding good content. And then the third is consistency, which can be the hardest thing for a writer. I mean, I'm thinking about Mary Lou's advice about getting your butt in a seat and writing. I loved writing my book. I loved just sitting and writing and kind of taking my 3 or 4 hours a day and just writing it. I felt I got a lot of satisfaction out of it. And even though I consider myself somewhat of an extrovert, I think there's a large part of me that's probably an introvert. But the reality is that we need to, if we want to sell books, we need to let people know that we wrote a book. And that means that we have to ask people who have read our book to share our book. And that can often be a stretch, I think, for some authors, but it's an important thing to do. So it doesn't have to be, I'm getting better and better at it, quite honestly. Where, especially if people come back to me, I'll just say, you know, please write a review. And hey, do you mind just letting some other people who you think might benefit from the book know about it? Or maybe even gift it to them. So, yeah, so I'm just trying to think. So I think that's probably it in the world of marketing, as I kind of see it. I hope that's valuable for people. I think the challenge with my advice is, if you're a fiction writer, then I think you can really take that same process and that same those same pieces, but you might just need to be a little bit more creative around how you share content, you know. So
okay, thank you.
Sure.
Just a couple of comments before I open it up for questions from the audience. We haven't had many nonfiction writers on on the show in the past 3 years. We've had a lot of authors, so it's nice to get the perspective of nonfiction. We do have visiting us tonight in the audience, Paul Osher. And Paul, your book is nonfiction, right?
You know, it's nonfiction, but a lot of people call it a novel because that's the way I wrote it. And I considered that too, but it is nonfiction.
Yeah, so Paul's is
a better audience, a more direct audience to me.
Yeah, it's almost a memoir. It's almost a novel.
It's a memoir, yeah.
And it's almost just a history. So it is. It's kind of on the
travelogue.
A travelogue, yeah. And we have one other author on here, a guy named Alex Case. So if you're listening to this podcast, you can just search the page on the website and listen to Alex Case. And I want to mention him because he's an academic writer. He's a recording engineer, a former student of mine at Berkeley. And he wrote two books about engineering recordings. And he's won Grammy Awards, so he's a real expert on that. If any people listening to this, or if any of you here in the room know other nonfiction authors who might be interested in being on our show next year, please have them get in touch with us, because we would like to have more nonfiction authors on here. So I'm going to open it up for questions, and I do always ask if you would like to direct a question to one of the authors or to the bookstore owner. You can go ahead and do that, and I'm going to ask each author to respond to each question so we get three different perspectives. Questions? Don't all start screaming at once, because it will overwhelm the microphone with all these people in the audience.
Here you go. Do you also have an email list? And how do you gather your email people?
I have attached to my blog an email list, but people have to sign up for the blog, it's a very easy process. And then, like I say, I promise them that their mailbox will not be full, because I just send out every now and again. In fact, I'm a bit overdue to post, but again, it's at marylubagley.com, There's a section on my website for I'm an artist and an actress and an author. So there are different sections which do overlap. Mm-hmm. And then the blog is separate and very clear how you can get to the blog. Like I say, it's called Time to Write. It's meant for inspiration. Mm-hmm. And if we have time, there is a little piece of my blog I would like to share, because I think it's inspiring to people.
Chris, do you have an email list that people can sign up for?
Yes, we have an email list. For the first year that we were open, we used Constant Contact, and it was a great platform. Used it. I was doing monthly things. I was putting out sales, sale notices, and books that we have featured artists or artists and authors of the month type of thing, and then. As people would come in, we'd ask if they wanted to sign up for our email list, and we would sign them up. But I had to do kind of triple duty. If I was busy, I'd have to write it down. Then we could put it into our point of sale system. So then if we have returning people, we can keep track of who's coming back. So then we can offer things to them as recurring customers. But then I would also have to put them into Constant Contact via the computer. So we found that MailChimp integrates directly with our POS system. I put it in there, boom, it's automatically done. Personally, don't like their platform. Haven't been able to figure it out over the past year. And so now, after I've migrated from Constant to MailChimp, I'm now migrating back to Constant Contact, and I got to rebuild all our designs and stuff that I had. I couldn't figure out the other one, so... Back to triple duty, but right now with trying to get caught up on our events list, our events calendar, and behind on getting some of the books into our website, that's kind of last on my list right now. But I still do take names. If people are asking for a particular author, a particular book, a particular genre, I'll say, hey, before you leave, let me put you on our email list. If I come across something, I always make a note. I do put it in our POS system too, and there's a place to put a note too that they're looking for a particular book, be it an art book or a particular World War II, about the Navy and World War II something. I make a note. And I also try to make a mental note as well. If I come across that, like, oh, okay, then I have it written down and I can go back into our notebook and look for it.
Yeah, thank you. Tara, do you have anything else you want to add?
Well, just, you know, what I've done is I've created a free ebook, and it's called 7 Surprising Reasons You're Eating Emotionally. And so when people come to my website and they're obviously looking for help with their relationship with food, then this could be some valuable content for them. But by them downloading my ebook, they then get on to my ConvertKit email list. And that's just been a nice way to expand that list. But if I also post out to on social in some ways, I also have other ways of offering that ebook so that they can come back to the website and then be part of the list. So, and even when I wrote my book, one of the last pages that I have is, you know, come visit, you know, my email, my website. So I'm kind of always constantly thinking about how do I expand my community, and that was one way that I think has been helpful. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. I want to mention something too while I'm thinking of it. The authors have mentioned MailChimp and Constant Contact, and there is a charge. Well, I guess MailChimp has a certain amount of service you can get for free, but I've tried to use MailChimp too, and I'm a computer programmer of computer knowledge. I want to mention that the email program I use is called Thunderbird, and it's free and it's open source. It's a very good program. And we used to send out the emails about this event, our Mott publishing contacts, and hide all of the people in the blind CCs, you know, so that the person seeing the mail doesn't have everybody else's email address. But there are some problems with that. I won't go into them now, but I just want to mention that Thunderbird is free, and there's a plug-in called Mail Merge, and it does a good old-fashioned mail merge, so you can select the addresses, the email addresses you want to send it to, put them in a comma-separated values file, and then fill in a couple of fields on a form, and press a button, and it sends them out one at a time, so each person is getting it directly to them, and it just feels more personal, and it hides the junk. So I want to mention that that's Thunderbird and the Mail Merge plugin. And if anybody listening to the show or whatever has questions about it, you can write to me, steve@mottpublishing.net, and I can tell you a little more about it. Okay, are there other questions? You need to be a more interactive audience here. This is.
They were all really good speeches today. I don't know how many more questions there could be.
I guess we're hearing that the authors were too good at their job.
You're in Maine, and you talk about the Maine writers. Now, do they take writers from other states?
I believe so. It's the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. It's a very reasonable yearly fee to be a part of it. So then you get discounts on their workshops, their conference, which is Maine Crime Wave. They now have a once a year at least, and I think they're going to do it more often, pitch, where you can sign on to come and give a pitch to an agent. And they're just growing their programs all the time. And it's like, I think the minimum is you can pay $35 a year to be a member. You can pay more and get on the author's list with the picture and the book and all that. It's a little more.
Yeah. So another question that's related to Maine, have you found in other states that you, because you're from Maine, that they maybe don't want to take your book? Because, I mean, I've gone into a few bookstores in Maine and they're like, we're only taking books from Maine authors.
I haven't found that. I have a lot in Sherman's Books, which has 6 stores up the coast of Maine. They've taken my book, and I love these little checks that come in on a regular basis, so it's really nice. I'm a New Hampshire native, even though the story is a Maine-based story. It's a New England story. It's a anybody from a small town story. So I haven't had anybody refused on the basis of me being from Maine. Now, I'm not a native, so I'll never be a Mainer.
Yes. I'm going to ask, this is really for Chris. I'm just wondering, you don't speak highly of Amazon, but Amazon is here to stay. Is there a way you're working to exist amicably, coexist, where you can benefit, or competition, or
As an independent bookstore, and this is from a lot of other independent bookstores as well, there is no competing with Amazon. Their book sales are money losers. That's how they started out. They started out losing money. They still lose money on books because of the incredible discounts that they get from the publishers that we'll never get. They make their money by hooking people on Prime. And then from there, all the other big items, their TV network now, their movies, and high-ticket items. But Prime is one of their big things to get you hooked on that. So books are there. They're losing money. Obviously, that's where I need to make money. So there's no competing with that. What we do, though, what we provide that Amazon will never be able to provide. Well, I shouldn't say never, but... is community. We host author events. We host, we have our wine retail license now, so where we can have breweries and vineyards come in, either alone or during our other events, which we try to pair them with other events, to come and do tastings. We have coffee service, just a self-serve coffee bar. We're expanding at the beginning of the new year, and we're going to expand that. We're also going to eventually have local pastries. We're not going to be a cafe or anything, but it'll be a place to come sit down, grab a book, grab a table and chair, grab yourself a muffin or a pastry, or make your own bagel, cup of coffee, and sit there. We have other local consumable items as well. People can come in and get their books in a bookstore, asking if we'll, take their book. The one thing we could do with that is we can talk up a book. Everybody that walks into our store, the first thing I do is I point them to our new New England writers. For now, we take authors from around New England. Some are community specific, they're towns. For now, we have writers from all around New England. That's local for us. So I point them, don't forget, we have our new books here, used books here, but we have our New England writers here. These have all been read by me or my wife. They'll only go on the shelf if they're a quality book. And then I talk about them. Is there anything particular that you like? Oh yeah, I like fantasy, or I like self-help. Well, we have this great self-help book by Shanti Douglas, all about meditation and mindfulness. It's this, that, and the other thing. I love fantasy, dragons and stuff. We have great writers from here. This book is fantastic. This writer's fantastic. That's one thing Amazon cannot do, is talk up your book. And I love to talk, especially when it's a book that I'm passionate about and I've really enjoyed. I said, I'm not going to put it on the shelf unless, one, it's quality, and along with I like it. I mean, not everything is my taste, but it's going to be there if it's quality. And so I will talk up your book because I know you're trying to make money. You're trying to get your book out there. And as far as a marketing aspect goes, that's one of the things is anybody can leave a review on Amazon, and it's only going to get to certain people who are looking, who fit that algorithm that they have. You walk into your bookstore, or your friend walks into a bookstore, your family member walks into a bookstore and says, hey, I see you take local authors, I have so and so, their book is such and such, it's a great book, blah blah blah. Okay, I'll write it down, make a note of it. Somebody else comes in, hey, have you heard of this writer here? Somebody just walked in 2 days ago and talked to me. I'm going to look into this book. I'm going to reach out and say, hey, I've had X amount of people walk in with your book or talk about your book. let's work something out so we can have your book in here. Bring me a copy so I can read it over. And from there, it's in the store. I talk it up. That's how we compete and go above and beyond.
Right, you're a niche, really.
Yes.
Yeah,
and nice. Even if it's not about a book, I had a couple come in, say, can you help me find Riverside Rest Home in Dover? Yes, I can.
Yeah.
Amazon can't.
And you can't get there from here.
Google can, but Google, and actually, Google was taking them to the wrong place. And I said, you go here, you go here, you go here. Oh, can you recommend this, some of the authors from not in this area that come in from Connecticut, Maine, wherever, where's a good place to eat? Well, let me tell you where you can eat. Amazon can't.
Yeah, community is everything.
It is.
That's fantastic.
And my publisher put my book on Amazon. So I do say to people, you know, if you don't mind, since you're telling me you love this book, would you put a review up? All you have to do is be a customer of Amazon. You do not have to have bought my, and I make that very clear at book chats and book groups and libraries and everything. You don't have to have bought the book through Amazon, but you could put a review up there for me.
Spent $50 or something in the last 2 or 3 months, and it's not a what do they call it? Qualified review? Authorized? What is that?
Oh, they do say if the customer did
verified.
Buy it through them,
yeah,
there is a term.
It's a verified purchase.
Verified purchase.
So it counts on the star, I think. Maybe it doesn't because they got their algorithms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But people can read, you know, the reviews. People also can go inside and quickly look at your book. And again, I encourage anybody. I love the face-to-face. I love the readings. I was invited up to Quiet City Books in Lewiston. They have a vibrant reading series there and did some reading. So again, that face-to-face. And then I say, yeah, you can look into the book. But I also, again, love readings because I have found if I do a reading, people buy the book. I'm not about the money. I'm about the readers. So that just makes me so happy. So once they start hearing the story, boom, 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 you know, you get the sales. I've had the experience of there's a small store in our town, which is a gift shop, and it has some of my books. And they had a festival day, and I sat at a table, and it was like, you know, nobody's hearing the book. Nobody's, you know, there's a lot of things for them to look at. But readings are just, so again, my goal is to travel all around and just do readings.
You have such an excellent voice,
too. Oh, thank you. It's such fun.
It makes sense.
Thank you.
So I self-published and did a lot of research on how to publish a book. I keep telling myself that my second book will be easier because I learned so much about what it takes to publish a book. And I kind of heard the opposite, you know, that, hey, Amazon might not be around forever. And does an author really want to just use one platform and put all their, like, their book just on one platform? And so I published to Ingram and dropped to digital and then just excluded Amazon in that distribution with those two platforms and then went directly to Amazon I had to limit my distribution in Amazon to make sure that there wasn't any conflict. So I went wide with my distribution. Because it just felt right, I guess. So that's another option to take care of. And what I like about that is libraries and bookstores can try out the book and return the book through Ingram. And I like that idea. So
that's one thing that I keep forgetting to mention, is Ingram Spark is another one.
They're very easy to use.
They're easy to use.
Yes.
They're highly recommended as well.
Yeah.
Dart Frog versus Ingram, you can find those on Googling it. Dart Frog versus Amazon, Amazon versus, or Kindle versus Ingram. You can find all those reviews. And I've talked to a lot of people who have, we use Ingram for our purchasing. We're not with very many national publishers just because we don't buy. We're still in the process of building our clientele, our customers. So we don't buy in large bulks where I can get smaller amounts, not as great of a discount, but at smaller amounts anyways through Ingram. So yeah, definitely Ingram Spark is another way to go. For reviews, if I might go back to that for a second, on our website specifically, we encourage reviews. Every author, local author that we have, and I'm starting to do it with our nationally published books like Margaret Atwood's new book and stuff, all the books, all our new books and locally local author books are available through our website. And there's on the purchasing page, there's a comment section. And I encourage everybody who buys our books, I say, please, 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 either send me an email, send me a message through the website, or there's a space on the review. Just search for the book on our website. It comes up, and there's a comment section. Leave a comment. I'll get a notice there's one there so I can share it with the author.
That's great. Because I have so many people that tell me they love the book, but they're hesitant to put an online review. Mm-hmm. So they send me emails and things. Oh, I love this, and they go on and on and on. And then I do ask them if they'll do a review where people will see it. But I went to a workshop about marketing. Christine Halverson, who's over in Peterborough, but she comes to Manchester and sometimes over to Portsmouth and does workshops on marketing. So she taught us things like how to make a book trailer, which is actually fun.
In what format?
There are a couple of different options. If you have an iPhone, there is a...
I've been...
Yeah, there is a book trailer thing. It's kind of limited, you know, but I use some of my own photos, and then there are these set pages, and you can put some text in and have some music in the background, and it's just fun.
It
was just something I found on my iPhone.
Okay.
I am, like, technologically illiterate, so I did it. But she was telling us in this workshop that even with the big boy publishers and the top writers in the country, you know, the ones making the dollars, they get a budget for marketing, but almost everybody else, like, has to do marketing. So it's just, you know, if you're a writer and you want to just sit there and play with this dialogue and characters and stuff, sooner or later. Although I would tell people if they're just starting to write something, don't be thinking about that and worrying about it. The first thing you want to do is write a good book. And then, you know, think agent, publisher, etc.
Think later if someone might buy it.
Yeah.
One.
But they will.
Sorry. We have another question here, Denise.
A bookstore owner, I'll tell my questions first, and you can answer what I was going to say. Being a bookstore owner, do you communicate with other bookstores? My other question is, what do you guys think of e-books? And since you have an email list, I don't know what size it is, but once you tell your people about your book, do you feel that you should be telling them over and over and over again about your one book? Or do you think they only
want to
hear from you once or twice
or 10
times?
Mm-hmm.
That's all I have for right now.
I can
first
start.
First question
is
for Chris, right?
Do you want me to start with the last question first? And we can talk about...
Yeah.
So, you know, when you send an email blast out on your email list, like, an average open rate, it might be, say, 30%. So, meaning, you know, say I had a list of 1,000 people, only 300 people are opening my emails. And I'm not sure what the industry average is. It might be a little lower than that. But like, you might have a little bit of a higher open rate.
Yep.
But so my only point is that even though we're talking about even though I'm talking about my book, I can't make the assumption that everyone opened my email and knows about my book. what I often will do is I'll offer content and then I'll be like, by the way, have you read my book yet? It'll be like a little, you know, like, oh, I happen to mention this in my book. So I can kind of be a little... You know, I just kind of drop hints a lot because I realize that, you know, maybe people are like, oh, I've been meaning to buy that book and I just haven't had a chance to buy it yet. And they just need another little reminder about it. And I try to be tactful and, you know, respectful around it and not be. So I just, I recognize that that it you know, and I think often it's, you know, what I understand, like, you know, sometimes it takes people 3 to 5 times of hearing something to actually act on it. You know, like when I owned my yoga studio, I found people were like, oh, you know, my cousin told me to come, and then someone at work told me to come, and then I saw a flyer at the coffee shop, and now here I am. So, people don't act the first time you tell them to do something. It takes...
You have to get it to the front of their brain.
You gotta, you gotta sort of nudge them along a little bit, so...
Another thing that's helpful is to, I keep being told, and my publisher is nudging me to get going on the second one, is to have a series, have another book coming... So I get a lot of, I can't wait till the next book, you know, when is it coming? I am feeling a little pressure, but a series is always a good way too, and you just can't, I feel you can't get that name out there often enough. And I do have friends that will suddenly say, you wrote a book? You know, and I've been putting it on social media and talking with people and doing groups and, you know, all of that.
And you're like, so, you live under a rock? Come on. Well, and I've heard, and I can't say this because I haven't started my second book yet, but I have, you know, I've heard the best way for you to sell your first book is to write your second book.
Yep.
Right? Didn't we talk about that when we met before? Yeah.
One of the frustrating things for a bookseller is the author not getting the word out about your book.
Mm.
We can only do so much. As the customers come, as I get the book, I'll put it out there, put a picture, I'll social media the heck out of it for the first couple days, put a write-up, tag you in it, whatever it's called. But I have thousands of books that I have to market, that I have to advertise for. The simplest and easiest thing you can do, you know, throwing it up that, yep, it's available on Amazon, go to Goodreads, that's great. But where you're going to get the real reach is saying it's at a Freethinker's Corner and tagging the store. Yeah. We're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook. Still have no idea how to use Pinterest, but we have an account. But the three major ones, let them know where to get the book. Get it at River Run, get it at Water Street, do it in one post. Say, hey, I just went out on this big, huge coastal tour of New Hampshire, and my books are in all these stores here. And then you have to do the footwork too. We have one author, phenomenal lady. She was one of our very first Dart Frog allotments that we get every 3 months when we first signed up with Dart Frog to partner with them. And her name is Alana Mugden. She's from New York. And her book is Dragon Speaker. And it's a very good young adult fantasy, dragons, magic, all that kind of stuff. It's a very good book, but the one thing she did was marketed the heck out of it. She called me or emailed me saying, hey, would you mind if I come and do a sign? Sure, why not? Before it was even in our store. And from that point, we had her in. We found out that she likes to get dressed up in dragon costumes. So we did it as a cosplay event. We were still fairly new, so it didn't go over too well. We got a few people. But she thought it was great. We had a couple other authors, too, to kind of make it a group thing, where we had some other young adult fantasy writers there as well. They all got to network. And then she... toured all around New England. Then she got back and she went back to New York City. She jumped in her car again a few weeks later, drove all around the Southeast. Then she went to the Northwest. Then she went up to Alaska. She's gone everywhere. Back to your first question, yes, we talk about her. I belong to an indie bookseller's Facebook page, and which is great for us, for new stores. We share ideas, but occasionally an author will come up. Hey, we just got this book in, or we're looking at booking this person for an author signing book talk. Anybody else have experience with her? Absolutely do it. You can't go wrong. And then from there, like I said, she's done her footwork, and her second book debuted at, she did the book launch at the Barnes & Noble's in Manhattan. and her third book comes out this spring. We've had her back once more for her second book, and we'll have her back for her third book. We have another author who all they do is just post on their Facebook page. You can get the books at an independent store or through my website. What independent stores? You know, some of them are only open for 3 months out of the year. They're coastal gift stores. You need to tell them where it is. And again, your first question, yeah, we don't, I will ask if your book is in any other store. And, you know, if you say Water Street or River Run or some of the other ones around here, I may call and ask how it's doing. But I'll ask you how it's doing. I mean, it could do great on Amazon, but I want to see how it's selling in a face-to-face right here. You know. And I apologize, I don't remember what your second question was.
What do you think of e-books? I've never done an e-book.
I think e-books are fine. I think
e-books?
We do. We partner with an e-book company called Hummingbird Digital Media. They do e-books and audiobooks. We do it for the... We promote it as our e-book company, as our e-book partner, because before we partnered with them, we partnered with an exclusive audiobook company called Libro.fm. It's not Amazon. It's not Audible. They're an independent company. Both of them are independent companies that only deal with independent bookstores or independent. As an author, you can... I'm not exactly sure how it works, but you upload your stuff and they do that. But they only deal with independent people, put it that way. So through our website, you go to the book section, you'll see audiobooks. That'll take you to our page, which describes Libro. Then it takes you, you click on the link, and it takes you to our homepage on their platform. And we can tailor that however we like. We can move things around, do our bestsellers, do our most recommended, our staff picks, national bestsellers, whatever. And we can also do that with Hummingbird. So we have the audiobooks, we'll take you to Libro, ebook button will take you to Hummingbird, because we only kind of keep them separate. Any portions of or portions of any sales come back to us, so that's how they support. And it's worked pretty well for us. Hummingbird really hasn't done too much. I haven't promoted that as much as I would have liked. It's still kind of on the bottom of the list for me to do, but Libro, I'm always promoting them because they send us once a month a list of audiobooks to listen to, so that's how I get a lot of the books, nationally published books that are in our store. So I kind of stay on top of that because I'm listening to it at the time. In general, though, ebooks, the trend is that they're not as popular as they were, and the trend is it's still declining. Audiobooks is growing.
Yeah.
Yes. So I would highly recommend checking out Libro FM. Some part of the page, the bottom of the page, there says for authors, and I believe you just upload, you record it, you upload it, and then from there, I don't know, but I haven't gotten any feedback from that. If you do it, let me know.
Okay.
Give me some feedback. But it's the same thing with you know, and the kind of the heartache I have about the ebooks and Amazon is you work so hard on your novel or your nonfiction or, you know, self-help book. You should be compensated for that. And with the low prices that they... with the amount that they take from you in the first place, from my understanding and talking to other authors, you, in a lot of cases, lose money. And I see a lot of authors out there saying, now, let me start by saying, in Alana's case, she's on her third book. So a great marketing technique that was brought up is, my second book's coming out, advance order my second book, pre-order my second book, and I'll throw in the free ebook. Or I'll throw in a free part one.
Yeah, that's a great.
That is, I can understand that. That is a good way to market. Hummingbird, if you can do that on their platform, probably not. Unless you can give them some sort of code or something where they can get it for free. I don't know. So I understand that is a good marketing aspect as far as Amazon goes. But just to give away your book for your ebook for 99 cents or a penny, I don't understand the rationale with that.
No.
So
I can see audiobooks, but I don't have any idea how much you make off of them. A lot of people talk about it, but they're great, they love them, but I don't know if you make much money off of that.
I think you might make like 7 or 8. I was investigating that.
Well, that's not bad.
No, it's not bad at all.
That's not bad.
More than
but you do with audiobooks. Do have to bear in mind that you have to have. I know Paul and I have talked about this. You have to have a good reader.
Oh, it's got to be good.
And
I started worrying. I almost had it done. I started worrying that maybe the reviews would hurt my real book. So I'm gonna stop to it.
That's one of the downfalls with some of the books that we get. I have to when I'm listening to them. I kind of have to separate it. Sometimes I don't have to. Sometimes just the reading of it, be it from the author themselves or they have somebody else read their book. That can be done on Libro. You can read it yourself if you like. It's just great. Everything, it just works. And there are some times where it's just the reading in this is great, but the story is just, I don't think it's that good. It doesn't fit.
Yeah.
Majority of the time, it's the other way around. I really have to bear through a story to really pick out the story and put aside the narration because the narration is just terrible. Certain phrases or certain words, the way the narrator says the word, can even throw it.
Yeah,
it kind of can throw it off.
I can almost see like you doing one version of your book in print and what you're trying to say.
Yeah. It can be. Because if you do it yourself, you obviously know how you want to say it. Alana just did her audiobook, and she's able to put in the voices the way she wants you to hear the voices of the different characters. Sometimes you don't get that with... I don't know what...
You can probably edit some of it somehow. I haven't checked
it out. I'm not sure how that part works. If you can...
I can see like having multiple people talking, you know, different things throughout an audiobook.
That is an option.
Interesting...
Yep.
Rather than just your voice, which people might get sick over after.
There are some that we've listened. There are some that we've listened to that they have multiple voices for different characters.
Yeah, so that would be fun. But I don't know. That's marketing. That might be a whole different world too.
The narrators. I just learned that they're called actors, right? Mm-hmm. And some of them are just like an act. Like I read one of the Lonesome Dove ones by Will Patton. You know Will Patton? You've seen him. He's like a character, but it's amazing that he captured all the different characters had different voices, and he was just amazing. I got a lot of respect for him.
One of the things I recommend as well is for live readings at bookstores or wherever you're doing a live reading. Practice reading your book.
Can't get practice too many times.
No, and get comfortable reading it.
Yeah.
Because that's what I like to do when you visit our store is to do, if we have people there that aren't just walking in and out, we actually have an audience, you know, get up and read. Something that I've been doing lately, though, is if we just have a walk-in thing going, is do a Facebook Live. Introduce yourself, talk about your book a little bit, and then do a little bit of a reading. My last group one, I did that, and Alana was part of that, and she got into the character and everything. The second author, same thing. She got into it. Then the last couple, you could tell that they were very shy about reading their book. Their head was down in the book, couldn't hear them very well, stuttering over words. So that may not happen. You may not be asked to do that, but maybe be prepared.
Like I'm a children's author. I've got like 7 or 8 books, but when I go in to do readings for schools or libraries, you know, there could be 8 kids, there could be 26 kids, so I have to kind of gear it to the age and who's there and who's sitting still. But it's amazing, they will sit still like crazy for you, but I tend not to read my whole book because I know my story so well, I just kind of turn the pages and talk about it. And rather than trying to, you know, look down and I'd rather look at them and watch their faces and responses and kind of animate to them what they want to listen to. And then if you see they're getting restless, then it's like, okay, this pulls different things out, and that's about all they can take. But,
yeah, again, the beauty of being able to face-to-face.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can gauge what's happening in the interaction.
Yes, because so I don't really think I've ever gotten through a whole book reading, even if it's a kid's book.
Well, on that topic, because I do want to try to wrap it up before midnight, you asked if you could read something, and maybe we'll have Tara read something, and then we'll wrap it up with that.
This is just a brief passage from one of my blog posts intended to help move people along if they're feeling a little stuck in the writing or blocked or whatever. All who follow the Armand Gamache series by Canadian author Louise Penny know that Louise's husband died in the fall of 2016. Michael had been the inspiration for Armand Gamache, as well as her devoted partner and supporter, her great love. After his death, Louise told her agents and publishers she was taking a year off, but believed in her heart that the multi-book series had come to an end. She could not write about Gamache again. She begins the acknowledgments page of Kingdom of the Blind, released in November 2018, as follows. A funny thing happened on my way to writing this book. A funny thing happened on my way to not writing this book. I started writing. She then explains how a few months after her decision, she found herself sitting at her pine writing table with her laptop open. And I wrote two words, Armand Gamache. Then the next day I wrote, slowed his car to a crawl. And the next day, then stopped on the snow-covered secondary road, period. I love the way she told this part of her story. I now find myself stuck as I write my second in the series, which began with Otherwise. I'm slogging through and know that a lot of what I've written so far will end up in a file of failed attempts. Following a wonderful flurry of readings, sales, and book group discussions for Otherwise, I'm in a brief lull, and some life events around me have me looking down the slippery slope that leads to overwhelm and depression. So I look to Louise, and to Anne Lamott, and to Rumi, and to all the wise teachers who sit on my desk, their colorful spines a standing array of encouragement. And so I trust story as a way through Louise's story, Armand's story, my story, Margaret's story, and I honor the notion of the shitty first draft, and I welcome each new arrival to this guest house of being human, even if they are a crowd of sorrows, and even if they aren't here to clear me out for some new delight. And I start writing, taking it word by word.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. That was lovely. Well, I'm just opening a page. Don't lose control. When Diane and I started working together, she shared her concern about her feelings. Her childhood was really tough, and when her father passed away a few years ago, she had a panic attack a few months later. I'm afraid of what will get unearthed, she told me. Diane's emotions were unpredictable, and she was afraid of what would happen to her when she felt them. Feeling them meant she may not be able to control what happened to her. This was Diane's story. We all have heartbreak and sadness in our lives, and a common reaction is wanting to put the pain in the past and try to forget about it. Diane's beliefs around not feeling safe to feel her emotions is a common narrative among the clients I work with. Staying in control of how we feel means we don't feel, and it's easier to run away from how we feel. It's easier, for example, to turn to your work or your to-do list and keep busy with those things you know how to control. If we fear losing control and feeling too much, food can be the answer to our fears. Eating and overfilling our body gives us enough distraction. As I started transforming my own relationship with food, I didn't notice what I was feeling, but instead how often I wanted to overfill my body with food. Whether it was a snack or a meal, I always wanted another scoop or serving. The extra food made my body feel a little heavier. And if I had been floating and feeling insecure, another serving of pasta or another half sandwich brought me down to earth. When uncomfortable feelings start to arise, food offers us safety in our body. Eating offers us a way to feel secure.
Thank you. Excellent writing and excellent reading. Thank you. I think we will wrap this up. I want to thank WSCA Community Radio for providing the venue here. And I want to thank Marilyn Carter for helping me produce this this show for 3 years. And I especially want to thank our authors.
Thank you.